And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great hour for you this hour. It is the brand new year, so happy new year, everybody. We're going to be obviously catching up on some news. Our breaches of the week is going to be pushed aside because we are going to go through the worst breaches of 2020. I think we're all glad to be done with that year. And our deep dive is going to be on what is shaping up to be the worst hacking in history. It is known as the SolarWinds breach. You may have heard of it. I am going to dive deep into this day by day and tell you exactly what is going on with this. So stick around. It's going to be great. And as always, let's start with the news. And in Facebook/Apple news, we're going to be talking about Apple's new privacy policy, Facebook's response, and what Facebook's employees have to say about this. It's rather interesting. Now, between the break between my last radio show in December of 2020 and this one, I did a slideshow on Apple's, basically on video and obviously on podcast form. I did a video on Apple's latest version of their operating system for the iPhone and the iPad. It's known as iOS. And it was literally slide after slide after slide after slide of the just zillion ways that the Facebook app is data mining the bejesus out of you. Facebook was not happy that essentially Apple is, as you install it into the new operating system, into your iPhone, Apple is saying, hey, this is all the ways that Facebook is data mining you and every app that is data mining you, not just Facebook, but Facebook is the target here. Here's every way that Facebook is data mining you. Do you want to accept this app? And then you can say, yes, I don't care about data mining and let me use Facebook. Or you can say, oh my God, they are getting absolutely everything from me. No, I don't. Facebook was not a fan of this. And so Facebook responded by taking out full page ads in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and I think the Wall Street Journal or another major publication, basically decrying how Apple is hurting small business and how Apple isn't so great on privacy themselves. And I will talk about that. But first, I want to give you an update from Facebook because it's coming from their employees. Now, multiple sources basically are reporting on this, but this is just beyond interesting because to quote one of these sources, and I quote, this is BGR, the Facebook campaign is more about Facebook than a defense of small business, even though the company paints it that way. Apple's iOS 14 privacy feature might hurt Facebook's bottom line by convincing more people to opt out of data tracking, the EFF or Electronic Frontier Foundation. I can never say their name right, but they are doing amazing work on privacy. The EFF has already blasted Facebook for the way it's attacking Apple, saying the latter is doing the right thing and calling for Google to follow. A new report shows that Facebook's own employees aren't happy with the company's approach, calling it hypocritical. And yes, they are. Now, BuzzFeed News obtained audio from a presentation to its workers, as well as internal comments about the Facebook versus Apple privacy fight. This is audio from a Facebook meeting. And some of the responses of Facebook employees, what they wrote internally in response to this PR campaign against Apple, are interesting. And so to quote one employee of Facebook, it feels like we're trying to justify doing a bad thing by hiding behind people with a sympathetic message. Another person said, and I quote, are we worried that our stance protecting small and medium-sized businesses will backfire as people see it as Facebook protecting their own business instead? Another person wrote, people want privacy. Facebook objecting here will be viewed with cynicism. Did we know this would be bad PR and decide to publish anyway? Another person wrote, how can we pick a message that looks less self-serving? And on and on and on and on. Now, this isn't the first time employees at large data mining corporations have spoken out. Both Facebook and Google have faced this kind of internal dissent before. I'm guessing realizing that you're violating people's privacy all day, every day really doesn't make for a conducive work environment. Now, let me be clear here. Apple's new iOS feature that enumerates this like zillion ways that Facebook is data mining you is refreshing, and I applaud them for shining a huge light on that. You should know how any app you install from the App Store, or if you're on Google, Google Play, although Google hasn't done this yet, but so for the Apple App Store, any app you download, you should know who made it, where it's from, what basically they're taking from you in terms of data mining, and on and on and on. So I applaud Apple for this, but, and this is a big but, Apple is no saint when it comes to privacy. I have written articles, I've done research on this, and there are many ways that Apple themselves have data mined us. Most notably, they were caught a few years back sending a ton of information about you and your iPhone back to Apple servers every 72 hours. This is even if you had iCloud for backup disabled. So you would disable iCloud and say, I don't want to sync to Apple's cloud. Your iPhone was phoning home every 72 hours or so, giving Apple a whole bunch of telemetry on your device. I also balked at their advertising a couple years ago in Las Vegas before a major conference. I want to say it was CES, a Consumer Electronics Show, and they had billboards up. It basically said, and it was a play on a Vegas slogan, what goes on in your iPhone stays in your iPhone. And that's just simply not true. I mean, Apple has been allowing the data mining to essentially take place. So what stays on your iPhone from your Facebook app definitely goes to Facebook, and on and on and on, not to mention Apple collecting information about you. This is what I'm talking about here. Now, I will say that they've been 1,000 times better than Facebook at privacy. Apple really has, but that's because their business model is selling you things, sometimes computers thrown in. So you buy an iPhone, you buy an iPad. That's what most people buy from Apple. Some people buy the MacBook and all of that, but the iPhone is by far their biggest driver. That is driving their revenue, whereas Facebook is not saying, hey, buy the Facebook-branded phone. They've tried that. It just doesn't work for them. They are making their money by data mining you and selling it to advertisers so that you can be more effectively advertised too. That is where they are driving their revenue. So Apple has been much better on the privacy side. Same with Microsoft, because you buy actual things from Microsoft, whether it's a copy of Windows or, you know, a Microsoft Surface, whatever that is. However, as Apple starts getting into content streaming way above and beyond selling you stuff on iTunes, I expect them to get into the data mining game in a major way as well. Basically, I think Apple talks a great game, but they're living in a house made of about 20% glass at the moment. And they're adding more to that house daily. So I'm glad that Apple's doing this. I challenge Google to go ahead and do the exact same thing with their platform. Please show us every way that Facebook and every other app, including your own, are data mining us, and let us opt in or out. I do not expect Google to do that, because Google's revenue model is the same as Facebook's. Basically, they give you free stuff, search, email, whatever, so that they can data mine you to make it more palatable for advertisers. So Google, I don't think, will do this. Apple will. And I have other issues with Apple on the cybersecurity and defensive side. I still prefer Android. But from a data mining and privacy side, I give them all the credit in the world for doing this. And so that is your Facebook/Apple/privacy news of the week. And in phishing test news, that's right, we actually test for phishing. We're going to be talking about GoDaddy, because they ran a phishing email test against their employees. And basically, it kind of proves why we need it, because it was rather insensitive and everybody complained. Now, I understand right now, before I begin with this news segment, that the world is hurting economically. Millions of people are out of work and suffering. None of us should be immune to that. We should always be striving to help each other through tough times. That's why GoDaddy's phishing test of its employees is so incredibly important. Now, here's the backstory on this, and I think this is actually rather important. Around a month ago or so, GoDaddy, and if you don't know who GoDaddy is, they are one of the largest domain registrars on the planet. You want to go get a, you know, whatever.com? GoDaddy has got your back on that. Now, so about a month ago or so, GoDaddy employees received what was essentially good news from their employer. In an email purportedly from GoDaddy, they were informed that they were going to be receiving a holiday bonus. Specifically, around 500 employees of GoDaddy received an email on December 14th of 2020. The sender's email address was happyholiday@godaddy.com. And basically, it made it look like this was created by GoDaddy. The email subject line was 2020 Holiday Party, whereas the message included basically like a glittering image and text that offered a $650 bonus to the employee. And it read, and I quote, "Though we cannot celebrate together during our annual holiday party, we want to show our appreciation and share a $650 one-time holiday bonus." The email further asked the recipient to fill out details in a form, basically by December 18th of 2020 to qualify for this bonus. They also added a sense of urgency as the email read, and I quote, "Any submittals after the cutoff will not be accepted, and you will not receive the one-time bonus of $650, in parentheses, free money, claim it now." Now, given the backdrop of COVID, many employees fell for this test and provided their details as requested. So, in other words, what ended up happening was GoDaddy sent them a phishing test email to see who would open it, who would answer it, in the same way that I could send something malicious as a criminal, if assuming I was a criminal, to somebody to get them to open it and get infected or whatever that was. Now, 2 days later from that, those who actually filled out the form received this email, and I quote, "You're getting this email because you failed our recent phishing test. You will need to retake the security awareness social engineering training." That's when angered employees went to social media, which is why it ended up on news outlets, and here we are talking about it. GoDaddy then issued this statement, and I quote, "GoDaddy takes the security of our platform extremely seriously. We understand some employees were upset by the phishing attempt and felt it was insensitive, for which we have apologized. While the test mimicked real attempts in play today, we need to do better and be more sensitive to our employees." But here's the thing. GoDaddy's own statement reads as a justification for the test. And here, I'll tell you why, because I actually support their action. I know it was insensitive, and I know we're all hurting. But this is exactly how a phishing scam is going to hit a company like GoDaddy. And the criminals that are phishing in this manner don't care about being sensitive to people's concerns during a pandemic. They're going to exploit them. Yes, it sucks that people were fooled, and I would be angry too if I was an employee, but I would also be extremely glad to find out that I didn't actually get myself or my company hacked. I have personally dealt with those people that fell for the phishing scams and lost their companies over $1 million, literally, because they fell for something. It sucks. It is awful. The world can be a cruel place, and unfortunately, in cybersecurity, we need to stay vigilant. And so I think it's also true that GoDaddy could have picked another lure, like another phishing lure, another way to get people to click that link. But that also makes me wonder what would have been more effective than a lure that literally plays to the emotional response of a target. These are the most effective, which is why cyber criminals use them all the time. Look back at when the pandemic started, and we were seeing news reports in the United States about runs on toilet paper. Oh my God, where am we going to get toilet paper? Blah, 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 blah. Everybody was selling out. What did the cyber criminals do? They started sending email links saying, oh my God, we have toilet paper. Click here to buy it from us. And then when everybody got their $600 check from the government, you know, that kind of thing, what did they do? They sent out notifications before the checks went out, the phishing attempts, the criminals sent out notifications saying your check didn't make it, click here to basically reorder the check. This is what we're talking about. This is what gets us hit. We have to be vigilant to these things, and it sucks. I hate it. I really do. But I know that at the end of the day, that employee is going to be more aware. And please feel free to disagree with me. Feel free to tell me I'm wrong. But hackers don't care. They don't care about your feelings. They don't care about your sensitivities. They just want the money, or they want whatever they want. And so we have to be vigilant. And so that is your phishing test news of the week. And in Zoom news, and you may have missed this one because there's so much stuff in the world going on with the election and everything else, and on and on and on. And obviously, as I'm sitting here talking to you, this is actually before the Senate confirmation, so I don't know how that went, but obviously the world is focused on the election and everything else, and so it's been crazy. So I understand if you've overlooked this one, but this one is actually rather important. Basically a ton of sources, the Wall Street Journal, basically a press release from the DOJ, and on and on. on, but here's what's going on with Zoom. A senior Zoom employee falsely accused users of supporting terrorism and distributing basically child abuse material in an effort to stop them from talking about the Tiananmen Square massacre, according to the Department of Justice. In a lengthy criminal complaint, the DOJ details how this employee, Xin Jiang Jin, worked to spy on and censor Zoom users around the entire planet. Notably, the complaint doesn't mention the popular video conferencing by name. However, it is clear from the document that Zoom is the company in question. As an accompanying DOJ press release made clear, Jin is accused of reporting basically to the People's Republic of China's intelligence services. His plot allegedly revolved around Zoom meetings planned for the summer of 2020. The intention of these meetings were to commemorate the June 4, 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre. I actually remember watching Tiananmen Square on television, you know, the guy standing in front of the tanks. It's a very powerful moment. Now, Jin was allegedly able to get the meeting shut down by essentially working to frame the users. The extent and detail of the alleged campaign to make pro-democracy activists, Chinese pro-democracy activists, look like criminals is just insane. Now, according to the DOJ press release, and I quote, Jin's co-conspirators created fake email accounts and Company One accounts in the names of others, including People's Republic of China political dissidents, to fabricate evidence that the hosts and participants in the meetings to commemorate the Tiananmen Square massacre were supporting terrorist organizations, inciting violence, or distributing child pornography. The fabricated evidence falsely asserted that the meetings included discussions of child abuse or exploitation, terrorism, racism, or incitements to violence, and sometimes included screenshots of the purported participants' user profiles featuring, for example, a masked person holding a flag resembling that of the Islamic State's terrorist group. That's what this guy was doing. Now, at least some of these meetings were shut down by Zoom, and in a statement to The Guardian, the company simply claimed that it was following the law. And to quote Zoom, "We regret that a few recent meetings with participants both inside and outside of China were negatively impacted and important conversations were disrupted." When reached for comment about these recent allegations by the DOJ, a Zoom spokesperson replied the company is, quote, "reviewing the filing," and would get back to basically all the publications that were reaching out, in this case, the Wall Street Journal. After the publication of this article, Zoom sent a statement and basically linked to a newly published blog post, which confirmed many of the DOJ's allegations. And I quote, "We terminated this individual's employment for violating company policies. We have also placed other employees on administrative leave pending the completion of our investigation." Now, I have talked about Zoom in the past, essentially violating privacy and all of that, but I think this specific case shows that point number one, Zoom has enough information on their users that this employee could identify those Chinese dissidents outside of mainland China that wanted to celebrate Tiananmen Square. And if he had received intel from the Chinese government, then it would be very easy to find these people's meetings and essentially disrupt them or accuse them of terrorism and horrible, horrible things to get Zoom to officially shut them down. Now, when you combine this with a Rolling Stone article from earlier this year that I did a video on and a podcast and all that, I'm sure I talked about this on the radio as well. Basically, there's a Rolling Stone article earlier, I shouldn't say this year, earlier in 2020, I'm still getting used to 2021, basically a Zoom spokesperson let it slip that they monitor meetings for inappropriate content. So we know that they can watch these meetings. In the case of Rolling Stones, they were talking basically about, let's just say, adult-themed parties that were being thrown on Zoom in the middle of the pandemic that goes against Zoom's guidelines. And that spokesperson basically said, well, we have tools that we can monitor this to find this out. The only way they're going to know if somebody is throwing, let's say, an illegal adult-themed party on Zoom is if they can actually see the video happening and going on. Otherwise, how are you going to confirm that somebody's actually doing what you think they're doing in the video, meaning they can watch it? Now, that said, we have all of this from the DOJ. Zoom has admitted it, that essentially they can go in and monitor their videos, their meetings, their everything live, to the point where they can start identifying people that are dissidents to the government that they adhere to. That is a huge problem. And so if you are using Zoom, please understand that your meetings are not private, your meetings are not secure. And once again, the DOJ has just confirmed that for us. So that is your Zoom news of the week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for Breaches of the Week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I am more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And for this week's Breaches of the Week, I actually wanted to do a retrospective on 2020 and talk about the worst data breaches of 2020, as we had just a ton due to COVID and everything else. I did the same thing at the beginning of 2020, though, obviously not knowing where 2020 was going to take us for 2019. So hopefully we can take a look back here at some of the worst breaches, not necessarily by record size, but by publicity, by disaster, by impact to humans. Some of them have massive records, some don't. But I think that these are the worst, and I'm hoping that we can learn from these mistakes and continue to make ourselves even more secure in 2021. And so with that, let's start in January with Estee Lauder. This is the cosmetic giant. They actually had 444 million records exposed. We're talking user emails, internal documents, and more, thanks to a phishing scam. That was obviously a huge, huge problem that they had. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a website called Cam4. This is an adult streaming site that is owned by an Irish company called Granity Entertainment. They got dumped 10.88 billion records with tons of personally identifiable information, not just on their adult stars, but also the people visiting the websites. This was a leaky database, meaning they didn't secure all of this massive amount of data that they are moving back and forth. And so by virtue of that, everybody got exposed. They lack security. And so if you're using them, now you know, if you didn't remember when I reported on that back in March. And I've reported on everything you're about to hear here. In March, there was a company called KeepNet Labs. They're based out of the UK. They are a security company, which makes it that much more worse because they should be more secure than pretty much everybody on the planet as they are keeping their records. They also had a leaky database, in this case, an Elasticsearch database, that exposed 5 billion records. We're talking passwords, some in plain text, some not, emails, and more. So obviously a huge, huge problem. And we saw billions and billions and billions of records exposed in 2020. We're getting there. And as the end of this, at the end of this segment, and then my next segment, the deep dive, will show you, this was the year of the hacker. It was absolutely bonkers. Moving on, keeping in March, we're going to be talking about a company called Whisper. Now, I found this one to be really interesting because Whisper advertised themselves as, quote, the safest place on the internet. And you know where I'm going with this. Now, they're a secret sharing app, meaning you could download the app and then share secrets among yourself and somebody else. They were running an unprotected database that had over 900 million personally identifiable records. And I think what makes this worse, even though it's not billions of records, 900 million, don't get me wrong, is nothing to slouch at, is that the fact that they advertise themselves as a safe place to share secrets, that PII information that got out is even more damning because, quite frankly, it could expose secrets of people. That was a huge, huge issue. Moving on in May, we have to talk about Blackbaud. Now, this was, until recently, and I'll get to it, the worst data breach of 2020, hands down. It dwarfed everybody until it didn't. Now, Blackbaud is a fundraising management for nonprofits, foundations, schools, and on and on and on. You've heard me in my breaches segment talk about essentially those companies and organizations that were disclosing that they got breached thanks to Blackbaud, and there were hundreds of those that I went through week by week. I just had one in my last breaches video, the very first video of 2020, first breaches of the week video, You know, also with a black bot disclosure. So it's still ongoing. And this happened in May. They got hit with ransomware and exposed personally identifiable information. And as I mentioned, hundreds of disclosures from hundreds of companies and organizations, and a ton of lawsuits have been filed against black bot as well. So we're going to see where that goes. But black bot is obviously in some serious trouble. They are the number two data breach of the year. And I was just shocked to see them move to number two. But time is time. Moving on, let's go to June and talk about a company called Blue Kai. Now, this was a startup that tracks web data, and they were bought by Oracle for over $400 million. Now, Blue Kai basically reviews all traffic for something like less than 2% of the internet, which is a massive, massive amount of traffic to basically be tracking for web data. And they got billions of records from Fortune 500 companies, from governments, from everything exposed, due to their incident. And so that obviously is a huge, huge problem, you know, that the world has with web tracking and data mining and all of that. But Blue Kai got basically the Fortune 500s and the governments of the world hit in a single breach. Moving on, let's stick with June and talk about Digital Management Inc., or DMI. They actually do managed IT and cybersecurity for outfits like NASA and SpaceX. They were actually attacked by the Doppelpayer ransomware gang, who publicly on the dark web exposed HR records, documentation, all this kind of stuff from NASA and SpaceX and all of that. This was right around the time that SpaceX was launching that rocket into space, and Doppelpayer on their leak site actually congratulated SpaceX for that and said, oh, by the way, pay us. We have all of your data. Moving on, and sticking in June, March and June were our crazy years, we had a company called Wattpad. Now, this is actually a publishing website for user-generated stories. They basically got hit, and 268 million records were sold on the dark web in an identity theft forum. That is where they figured out that they were insecure and since locked it down. But if you use Wattpad, that obviously was a very huge problem that you had, because 268 million records of people that were self-publishing or trying to get out into the publishing world got hit. And that is unfortunate.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.